Let's take a break from the news with another look at an Oscar contender. The film 127 Hours received 6 nominations, including Best Picture. It tells the harrowing true-life story of hiker Aaron Ralston, who in 2003 was trapped in a Utah canyon, a fallen boulder pinning his arm in a narrow space between 2 canyon walls until he frees himself by cutting his arm off. Oscar nominee James Franco stars as Aaron, an experienced but free-spirited canyoneer, who, by the way, still climbs with a prosthesis. But on that fateful weekend, he started with a challenge to bike and hike to a favorite spot, Blue John Canyon.
Blue John Canyon, guidebook says 4.5 hours to the Big Drop Rappel. I aim to take 45 minutes off that.
We see Aaron scurry over narrow red rock canyons, dropping down slots to beautiful grottos below. Then the boulder gives way, and he plunges down the narrow crevice. Aaron's trapped. He's dying. But then, is he hallucinating? He sees a small boy and makes the decision that will save his life. And when he does, director Danny Boyle's cameras don't look away. Danny Boyle is the Academy Award-winning director of Slumdog Millionaire. He didn't receive a nomination for directing this film, but he did get a nomination for co-writing 127 Hours. It's based on Aaron Ralston's book, Between a Rock and a Hard Place. And we spoke to Danny Boyle when the film first came out. You were at a screening here in Boston last night, and you came out after the screening, and you congratulated people for not walking out. I mean, you know, this is tough to watch.
Yeah, it is, and it was always going to be, really. The essence of the story is very harrowing by the end, and it's based on the book, really. I remember reading the chapter in the book, and it's extraordinary the way he describes it, because obviously he is visiting an area of human experience that very, very few people ever will. And he is our representative in that way, and that's how I think of him. I also think it's something that, despite, you know, if we feel squeamish about it, and a lot of people say, oh, I couldn't do that, or I couldn't watch that, or I think we could all do it. I mean, I think in the end we would all do it. Mm. And then, in a way, I thought there is a way that you actually feel like you want him to do it. You want him to be free now. And this is the price of being free. And it's a price worth paying. And as Aaron himself says, although he lost something there, he gained much more by this journey he was on. And he's a much more complete person now, ironically, albeit without an arm.
Well, what about your take on the American West? Aaron is out in Canyonlands in Utah, all orange steppes and majestic buttes and mesas. But we know immediately this isn't Robert Redford's West. This is your West. What kind of a West were you trying to show?
Well, I wasn't trying to fake it. I know nothing about the West, really. You know, I'm from Manchester, an industrial city in the northwest of England, and it felt to me like it wasn't a wilderness film. Because although he flees the city and heads into the wilderness, he ends up in a place where he has no view of the wilderness. He can't see anything. So it would be fake to keep showing the landscape the whole time. And secondly, I also believe it's an urban story, really. Because I think for me, there's a part of the story which is this magnetic pull we have as a crowd, this breed we are as people, pulls these wayward souls back to it in some way. It is illustrated in a story very deliberately through this vision of a child he has. And it's not a kind of religious vision. It's not like a Jesus or anything like that. This is clearly him and his future.
Just to underscore that, at the very end, he has a vision of a small child, and he realizes that's his child in the future, and that's what motivates him at the end to really get himself out.
And they say, with a child, you become part of a narrative that no longer ends with your death. There's a humility about it. It's not I've got to have a son. It's like you learn your place. That's my duty. That's my obligation to carry on, in a way. And it helps him achieve grace and move on through the final stage of the film.
We were just talking, you know, I've hiked out in these areas. And for me, it is slow and plodding when I'm out there. It is sweeping camera shots. I'm slow and plodding. It's Grove Face Grand Canyon Suite. But the Grand Canyon Suite is not what Aaron has in his headphones. Let's hear just a few seconds of what he's listening to. He brought this hard rock music and your fast editing with him. 3 images across the screen at one time, which isn't traditionally a way we see the American West. You saw this younger, hipper, more extreme version of the West.
And I related to that, really, and it felt like, to me, I could tell the story because it wasn't about the culture of the West. It was actually about a man and a rock. It was Beckettian, really. It's just a Samuel Beckett play, if you like. And he has to go to the essence of himself and all of us, really. It's just this human story, really. And he enters the place as the perfect specimen. He's the ultimate hero, if you like.
Well, and I can't believe we've gone this long without talking about James Franco, the actor. You know, the near impossible task of playing opposite a rock for much of a film. What your sense of what he brought to this?
I realised, because there was going to be nobody else in it, I thought we're going to have a performer who can find a wide range, really. And I thought of James, and I thought of, if you think of his work, like the difference between something like Milk and Pineapple Express, Spider-Man and City by the Sea, and he's made such a range of work. I thought, that's ideal, what we want. And although James gives the impression when you meet him of being a bit kind of out of it, a bit stoned, a bit sort of like half asleep, he has this technique. He's as sharp as anything, really. And he brought incredible intelligence to it. And this physical commitment. He literally had no one to talk to. He was facing a rock the whole time. And we would film 20, 30-minute takes. And he would forget, I think, everything, really. And he'd just take the audience through the experience of what Aaron went through, really. Factually, it's very, very accurate to what he went through, although we dramatised some of it.
How could you? Just the fact that he's there and the claustrophobia and the fear and the realization that no one's going to find him.
And also about the way that he's fled from people at the beginning and the way that he's taken people for granted. This learning process that he has to go on to appreciate the value and the carelessness he's had with people's affections, if you like. And when the crowd welcome him back at the end, there's a euphoria about it as well, which Aaron talks about as well, that sense of the extraordinary release you get when you actually do get released from almost certain death, you know, that sense of going back to people. And yet, he remains a climber and canyoneer. The leopard won't change its spots, you know, you cannot change the nature of these people, you know.
But I'm sure, well, you say, he leaves a note and tells people where he's going now.
Yeah, that's the change he's made, yeah.
Just have to ask you about A.R. Rahman, the composer you've worked with so successfully before, and he's also on this film. I mean, obviously, he's gold, and you both are together, gold statuettes. But again, this is an American movie, an Indian composer, and I felt that it wasn't an American composer. Again, that sort of jarring, you know, wait a second, this doesn't feel like the Canyonland. Did you ever second-guess that? It worked beautifully coming out, but did you ever second guess it going in?
No, I wanted AR to do it. I'd worked with him obviously on Slumdog, and I realised that in India they call him the Mozart of Madras. And actually, although it's a convenient label they stick on him, it's actually very accurate. His talent is extraordinary.
His music gives the feeling that we started off talking about. This isn't, I keep going back to Redford, but because it just signals it so quickly, or John Wayne. It's an updated version of a John Wayne character, but the feel is more international or something. I'm thinking that's exactly who this generation is that you're talking about.
Well, I hope so. There's an idea in the film. One of the journeys that Aaron goes on is that he has to open his eyes to places much further away than the wilderness, which are partly the cities that he apparently despises at the beginning, but then it's the rest of the world as well, in a way. So I wanted it to feel international. I didn't want it to be just a Western States film.